Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and today we are discussing about skills and technology in the future of work. Here at Bruegel, we are undergoing a research project on future of work and inclusive growth in Europe, supported by and developed in collaboration with the Mastercard Center for Inclusive Growth. The project, envisioned over the last 3 years, closely analyzes the impact of technology on the nature, quantity, and quality of work, welfare systems, and inclusive growth at large. The Sound of Economics will closely contribute to the project with a space for discussion and analysis on this important theme. So, this is just the beginning of a series of episodes which will be dedicated to the theme. And I'm happy for this to have with me Laura Nursky, who is a Bruegel Fellow and one of the researchers at the core of the project. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, Giuseppe. I'm very well. I'm happy to be here.
And to help us delve in the specific issue of today's episodes, skills and the impact of technology, I'm happy to welcome Dimitrios Pikios. Hi, Dimitrios.
Hi, Giuseppe. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be with you to discuss this very interesting topic.
And Dimitrios, you are the project coordinator at the European Classification of Skills, Competences, Qualifications and Occupation at the Director General for Employment, Social Affairs and Inclusion of the European Commission, also known as ESCO. You may be better than me to explain to our listeners what the ESCO project is and aims at, and how it relates to the European Skills Agenda.
Yes, thank you, Giuseppe. So indeed, I work at the European Commission, Director General for Employment, Social Affairs and Inclusion, and I am the project coordinator of ESCO, the European Classification of Occupation, Skills, Competences and Qualifications. ESCO was released in July 2017, and it aims in general to support the European digital labor market. It has three goals in the EU. The first one is to better link education and training to labor, and to make sure that people have access to the best opportunities in Europe, the best career transitions and the best education and training opportunities, also to the best jobs. The second goal is to ensure the transparency of information on skills through the system's interoperability. So there is a lot of information related to people's skills that exists in CVs, in job vacancies, in other documents, and all this information is exchanged between different platforms. So our aim with ESCO is to make sure that all this information is clear, transparent, trusted and upon, and fully understood in the same way by all players in the digital labor market, meaning employers, job seekers, education training providers, learners, but also policymakers. And this across systems, technologies, and of course, across borders and different languages. The third goal is to make sure that people have open and fair access to all this information on skills, on qualifications, on jobs, training. Therefore, we need to avoid the monopolization of data in the digital labor market. And for this, we have created European open standards like ESCO in order to counteract the risks of proprietary standards. ESCO is the basis for actions of the European Skills Agenda, which, as we know, aims at strengthening the sustainable competitiveness in the context of the greening of the economy, also to ensure social fairness in the context of the European Pillar of Social Rights, and to build resilience in order to react to crises like the current COVID-19 pandemic. So there are overall 12 different actions in the skills agenda, and a few of them are supported by ESCO. Like, for example, the second action, which is about strengthening skills intelligence. There are EU programs that use ESCO in order to analyze the European labor market and to identify which are the skills that are upcoming, are rising up now, or which are the skills more related to certain occupations, or which are the most demanded skills based on the requirements set forward by employers in the descriptions of in job vacancies. There is also action 7, which is related to transversal skills. And again, here, ESCO as a taxonomy includes already from the start, from the onset, a data set of transversal skills, which we are now completing in ESCO. We have been working with experts for more than a year in order to complete the transversal or soft skills data set that we have in ESCO and to create a structure for those transversal skills. And for the rest of the year, we are going to finalize this work and present this full data set with a standalone structure or hierarchy for transversal skills, come up with descriptions for every single concept of those transversal or soft skills in order to make it easier for the labor market, for example, for employers to describe in a fully understandable way what they are looking for in applications when people are coming to them in order to apply. There is also a third action, action 11 of the skills agenda, which is the new Europass platform. The new Europass was released in July of last year. It is a platform that allows people to apply to different jobs. It will also allow them to do self-assessment tests. There is also an infrastructure available for digital qualifications, digital credentials, which will be upcoming. Overall, the functionality of the Europass platform is based on ESCO. So in a very concrete and tangible way, ESCO supports different actions of the European skills agenda.
Thank you, Dimitrios. And Laura, I'm kind of wondering, how does that issue of skills relates to the research that you and the rest of the team involved in the Future Work projects are doing?
Sure. So in our project on the future of work and inclusive growth, we are bringing together researchers, policymakers, and business leaders to discuss the challenges that technological change is bringing both to the workplace and the labor market. So our goal is to make sure that the benefits of technology are shared among all members of society. And the challenges that we are looking at are issues like which jobs are disappearing, but also among the remaining jobs, what is the job quality, and also how to address any mismatch between the skills that are offered by job seekers and skills that are asked by employers. So we hope to address those challenges by investigating two main policy questions. So the first one is, how can we steer technological change in a direction that is labor complementing or welfare enhancing? But secondly, how can governments and businesses help workers to adapt to technological change through reskilling or transitioning initiatives? So for both of these questions, we need to understand how technologies like robots and AIs are impacting both the demand and the supply of skills.
So in which ways is technology impacting skills, and what are the effects on the labor market?
So technology can impact skills in many different ways, and I usually screen them on two dimensions. So the first dimension describes whether a specific technology or its implementation is skill replacing or skill complementing. And by that, I mean, is it decreasing or increasing the demand for skilled labor? I'll give a few examples. So during the second industrial revolution, mass production technologies like the electrified assembly line had an effect on jobs in the sense of simplifying jobs through severe division of labor. So these very simplified jobs made certain skills redundant and led to a decrease for skilled labor. However, during the third industrial revolution, we see the opposite. So computers and ICT were skill complementing technologies and actually increased the demand for high skilled labor. So the question of replacing or complementing technologies is a question of the impact on the demand for high skilled or low skilled labor. So Dimitrios, if I may ask you a question regarding those replacing technologies. So most research is coming to grips with the fact that it's not complete occupations or complete jobs that are at risk for automation, but instead it's specific tasks within occupations that are at risk for automations, and then the skills needed for those tasks will face a decreasing demand. Can ESCO help to pinpoint which skills are at risk for automation?
Yes, thank you, Laura, for this very good question. Indeed, yes, ESCO can help to do that. Overall, ESCO has 3,000 occupations and 13,500 skills, as we call them, skills and competencies, and knowledge concepts. In ESCO, every occupation is linked to a number of skills that are either essential or optional for somebody to perform given occupation. Also, every single skill and knowledge is presented together with those occupations for which the skill or the knowledge is either essential or optional. At the same time, all those concepts, they come with a full description. And everything is published in 27 languages, meaning all EU official languages, plus Arabic, Icelandic, and Norwegian. And of course, at the same time, everything is released as a linked open data with a unique identifier that allows digital platforms to use ESCO as part of their algorithms in order to provide services in the digital labor market. So the occupations part of ESCO, the occupations pillar, as we call it, comes with a hierarchy, which is based on ISCO, which is the International Standard Classification of Occupations of the ILO. At the same time, the skills part of ESCO skills pillar has another hierarchy, which is more focused towards the transferability of skills. So it's not sector oriented, but it's rather presenting different groups of skills, regardless of the sector, based on other criteria like the objective of the work or the tool used. And there, one can see indeed how skills are transferred from one job to another. An example that I like to give usually is that a skill related to taking care of an animal can be used, of course, in agriculture, but at the same time, it can be used by somebody working at the police force, because in many countries, police officers use horses. So in this case, as I explained, there are different metadata that come together with the main data, the occupations and the skills. But we don't yet have in ESCO specific metadata such as the risk for automation, because ESCO, in principle, is the European classification. So it has to capture the reality of the European labor market at that level. But when it comes to specificities of the different European labor markets, national markets and economies, there it would be a bit risky to identify the risk of automation, because not all European economies and labor markets have the same characteristics. But as I explained, we have occupations and we have skills, and those are linked together. So by using the skills hierarchy that is described in its basics, one can identify groups of skills in that hierarchy that focus on activities that have already been automatized or may be automatized. Like, for example, we have a group titled Communication, Collaboration, and Creativity, which is the very first group overall skills hierarchy. And then we have another group, which is the second group, titled Information Skills. So the group Communication, Collaboration, and Creativity focuses on the active interaction with other people, whereas the information skills group includes skills related to collecting and storing information. And we know that activities related to those have now been automatized somehow. So looking back at the occupations which are linked with the skills, and now I'm talking about a human looking into those hierarchies using the search functions or clicking, because this is possible in the ESCO portal, and one can identify different skills that fit to occupations and understand what are the occupations or the groups of occupations, because we have different levels and the overall occupations pillar in ESCO that are more or less likely to be automatized.
Great. So we talked about how technology is changing demand for specific skills. But there's also a second dimension to the impact of technology on work, namely on the skills of those who are already employed. So is technology or using technology in the workplace, in the job, is that upskilling or de-skilling workers in their day-to-day job? So de-skilling technologies, they don't necessarily decrease demand for human labor, but they make jobs dumber by delegating decision-making or craftsmanship or knowledge building to algorithms and databases and IT systems. So one famous example of a de-skilling technology is the autopilot in airplanes. So after the introduction of the autopilot, human pilots started to rely too much on technology for flying the plane, which reduced their capacity for flying the plane manually when it was necessary. So technologies like this can have a long-term effect on the human capital in the labor markets or the workforce because they slowly degrade the skill base of workers. So on that second dimension of de-skilling technologies, those that do not replace workers but take away learning opportunities, I also have a question for you, Dimitrios, whether ESCO knows how to identify which occupations the risk for de-skilling is largest.
Yes, thank you, Laura. Again, it's a yes. I explained already how we can identify which occupations are more at risk using as an entry point the skills that can be automatized. So if we can identify which are the skills that have already been automatized or can be automatized, this can lead us smoothly using the ESCO hierarchies and different links to the relevant occupations. And also another way is by looking directly to the ESCO occupation hierarchy. As I explained, we are using the ISCO hierarchy, International Standard Classification of Occupations, which has 10 groups. And there, in every group, we have 4 different levels. So every time, in every lower level, we have a more granular group. And then below them, we have the ESCO actual occupations. So 5th level and below sometimes. The structure of ISCO, as done by the ILO, on which ESCO is based, foresees that the top levels are those with a higher autonomy or skills at a higher level. So, for example, we have managers at the top level, and this means that those occupations which have higher autonomy have also more learning opportunities. So these occupations which have a larger or largest risk for de-skilling and are located at the top levels of the occupational hierarchy of ESCO have also, in principle, a large share of skills that can be automatized. So this is another way of how ESCO can be useful for those that are either researchers or are looking into the issue because of their individual interest and try to see if they themselves belong in a group of occupations which has a higher degree of automatization.
Great. I was going to start asking you about upskilling, but you already introduced this topic somewhat by talking about on-the-job learning opportunities, right? So you explained about how jobs with high autonomy have more learning opportunities. So that's also the third way that I will be looking at jobs is not just in terms of which skills they require from workers to enter the jobs, but also in terms of which skills they allow to build or learn on the job, like learning new technologies as part of the job. So I was going to ask if ESCO could help with that, but you already addressed this.
There is also more when it comes to learning opportunities, for example, or skill building. Because we have this division, as I mentioned earlier, between essential and optional skills for every occupation. And of course, the number of such essential or optional skills can vary significantly. It depends really on the given context. When we say optional skills, we mean the skills that may be required or occur when working in an occupation, depending on the employer, on the working context or on the country. This is the definition, let's say, that we have in ESCO for optional skills. So these optional skills may be used as an indicator of skills that can be built. Because if I move from one company to another or from one country to another, I may need some of those optional skills. So this is, I think, a source that can be used for this purpose, for skill building or upskilling or Of course, there is here the same risk as earlier, because the EU has different economies, and here we cannot say that very specific information would be the same for all the EU member states. However, what we are doing in ESCO, we have been doing this since 2019, is trying to connect qualifications to skills, because we believe this is very useful when it comes to upskilling, reskilling, you know, building skills and knowledge. We have been doing this with a number of EU member states using artificial intelligence. We developed an AI-based tool which uses the descriptions of learning outcomes of qualifications in order to provide suggestions for relevant ESCO skills. We did the first phase of this pilot in 2019, and the second phase took place in 2020 and concluded very early in 2021. We will soon publish the conclusions. We did it with 10 member states and a number of international organizations that offer qualifications or courses from their side and tested the tool in order to improve it. The main purpose here was to see if this is possible to do, if such a tool works well, and what are the resources involved, because I think we would all agree that in order to go then to a phase of mass linking and mass presentation of which skills are relevant for all those huge numbers of qualifications provided in Europe, we would need a more automated way. So this is another way of how ESCO can be used. And finally, we have quite a few platforms that provide services out there and use ESCO in order to identify skill gaps on the basis of skills mapping. For example, we have a French platform, Boosters, which provides services to HR departments of companies for skill mapping within the organization. So they use ESCO for this, so that big companies are able to identify for their staff which are the skills that the staff has. For example, in order to staff a new project, or and this is the very relevant thing here, to understand what kind of reskilling or upskilling, what kind of training is required for people to do better their current job or to move to another position within the organization, which may require different skills or higher level.
So this basically is one of the ways to help workers to transition to better or safe from automation jobs, or like ensure that their skills and occupations, if they are at risk, they can be tackled, right?
Yes, indeed. It really depends on the use case. So the given platform or the given service in the public sector or in the private sector, depending on what they are aiming at, they can use ESCO in a flexible way.
Aren't you afraid that they might also be used to lay off workers? You know, there is a positive attitude to say this should be used to reskilling and so on. But is there also danger that private companies are going to use this mapping that you're doing in order to basically saying this cohort of workers that we have don't have the skills that we want? It's more costly to invest in reskilling or help them to transition into something else. I'd rather, you know, go on the job market and see, you know, there are some young people or like people that have the skills that I need now, and basically could be a boomerang effect on those workers which have skills which might be at risk. I'm just provoking here, but I guess that this is some serious thinking that we need to take into consideration in this kind of context, right?
Thank you, Giuseppe. Thanks for the provocation. We always welcome provocation. In principle, the creation of ESCO aims at helping people to understand the same thing around Europe. Because as we all know, Europe is not one country. There are different languages. There are also different technologies applied. And there are different ways in which every occupation is named in the different languages, in the different countries. And there are also different ways of understanding which are the skills that are required for somebody to perform an occupation. So these are really obstacles, barriers in people understanding the same thing. And one of the biggest threats in the overall European labor market is to leave it to somebody to identify in which way those occupations and those skills and knowledge concepts should be described, and depriving people from opportunities. So if me as a job seeker, for example, I don't have access to all the information which is out there that will help me to find a new job or to find a better job or to escape a job which is under any kind of risk, then we have a problem. And such risks can arise from proprietary standards, for example, or from the lack of communication. If I cannot understand what an employer needs, maybe I'm going to miss opportunities. Or if I'm an employer and I cannot understand how exactly to describe tasks, occupations, and skills, let's say that I own an SME, I run an SME. Maybe it's too difficult for me to have expert people working for me who will do this in the context of an HR department. So all these problems exist, they're real problems. And that's why ESCO was created. And we have seen that there is a lot of uptake of ESCO. We have more than 80 platforms and projects using ESCO, either in the private or in the public sector, in the European digital market. And we have also non-European countries that are either already using ESCO or are now preparing to use ESCO in different functions in the digital labor market in order to provide the services to their citizens for different reasons. So I would say that the problem solved by ESCO is a bigger problem, and it's a more fundamental, the one of people being able to understand the same thing, trust it, and being able to find opportunities or find the right people, and you know, retraining, reskilling, upskilling, and really, in the end, a bridge between the labor market and education and training, because we know that these two go together.
Laura, maybe you would like to add more on this general issue, because that's, I think, one of the big topics, you know, like how do we ensure this reskilling? How do we ensure that we manage a transition, and how we can help workers for this kind of transition?
Yes, definitely. Transitioning is one of the major aspects of the project that we are working on for the next 3 years. And what worries me personally the most in this topic is that when researchers analyze skills and occupations that are at risk of automation, like sales, customer service, clerical roles, they find that many of these at-risk jobs tend to require a similar skill set. So as a consequence, when workers who are at risk or who lose their job, even when they transition to new occupations with similar skill sets, they still tend to get stuck at risk jobs. So it's important to understand which occupations are so-called stepping stone occupations. So jobs that increase worker skills and experience and allow for greater career mobility afterwards. So when we know this, we can help workers to make good career choices, thinking of not the next job, but the job after that. That same analysis also shows that these at-risk workers, they will require extensive retraining if they want to reach a whole new skill set for an occupation that is at lower risk of automation. And these vulnerable groups, they are typically harder to reach with reskilling programs or VAT programs, while they are actually in the highest need for reskilling. So that's definitely a challenge that we need to tackle.
Thank you, Laura. And I would like to end on a positive note, if possible, and ask a question to both of you, because technologies do not just replace tasks, but also create new tasks. I mean, we've been speaking about that since the beginning of this episode. We've been mentioning AI. So, I mean, like algorithm design, for example, is new tasks and new skills that are required for this kind of new tasks. So maybe just a broad question, what are the skills of the future for you?
So indeed, this is crucial, because we need at any moment to be able to understand the realities of the labor market. The labor market, of course, has its own dynamic, depends on the economic developments out there. And there are different changes, categories of changes that need to be reflected. And this is one of our main goals in ESCO, to be able to cope with this change and to make sure that ESCO reflects those realities. So first of all, there are indeed, as you said, trends, new skills that emerge. Employers, they require new skills as they deem themselves. And this needs to be identified and reflected in what we do. Then there is also the education and training area, where the providers of education and training at all levels, they have their own requirements, or they understand that their curricula must include certain qualifications. And I have explained earlier our effort to connect such qualifications with skills in ESCO. And then we have the language aspect. So every language is a live thing. So there are changes in the way that we name skills or occupations. There are variations. In ESCO, we have what we call synonyms or non-preferred terms. So for every term, there is a list of synonyms for the given language. Then we have technology. So changes in the technology that the ESCO implementers, all those platforms and projects that provide services in the digital labor market, they use technologies and they have their requirements and we're in contact with them. So ESCO is in a process of ongoing, continuous update. We are now in the middle of a big exercise for coming up with the next version of ESCO. Since July 2017, when ESCO was released, we are with version 1.0, and now we are preparing version 1.1, which will be released at the end of this year. We worked for this version very manually, so the whole ESCO team identified new occupations and new skills and knowledge concepts that have appeared since July 2017 in the labor market. And we validated all those new concepts with expert organizations like EU professional associations or like sectoral group blueprints. And we're starting the process of translating all those new concepts. So we're talking about more than 500 new occupations and skills. So the majority, more than 400, are skills and knowledge concepts that will be in the new ESCO. But obviously, this manual exercise should not continue being manual. So we have developed AI capacities in ESCO, an AI model that analyzes mainly online job vacancies and also information from CVs and other sources to identify all those upcoming and rising skills. The same also for occupations, of course, and based on also on the similarities between occupations or skills to improve the relations between them, because ESCO is all about structure at the same time. And we aim in the future to continue with this ongoing continuous update based on AI. To give an example, when ESCO was released in July 2017, the blockchain was not very known. It existed, but up to that point, it wasn't a technology very much used. Since then, it's very, very, it has become very important. It's used in many industries. So we made sure that we identify occupations and skills that are relevant to the blockchain technology, working also with the relevant EU association of businesses, blockchain businesses, to make sure that we cover this area.
Thank you, Dimitris. And Laura, do you agree with those trends that Dimitris just said, or would you have something to add that maybe we might be forgetting?
Yes, thanks, Giuseppe. I think that ESCO offers a very unique opportunity to detect these emergent skills in almost real time by reading these online vacancies. I will just answer this question based on my own experience as a worker in organizations. So I work both as a data scientist and as an organization designer. And the way I look at it, besides the obvious need for digital skills, like basic computer skills, but also more advanced data literacy and programming skills, I feel like technology is changing how we collaborate in organizations, and especially now with COVID. So communication and information technologies like video conferencing, the way we are recording this podcast right now, we had to switch platforms in the middle, and how we are storing information in the cloud. All of these technologies are supporting telework across many high-skill occupations in several sectors. However, these communication channels are quite narrow-band in nature, meaning it's difficult to read body language or to hear subtle changes in intonation. So I feel like that makes emotional and social intelligence or teamwork skills even more important in the future. And then finally, as AI is slowly taking over decision-making in organizations, I feel that human judgment and critical thinking will still stay important and become more important when we need to keep oversight of those algorithms in organizations.
If I may, I fully agree with Laura. In our methodology, we intend to have the human in the loop, the experts, because we want to combine, of course, the data-driven approach based on the realities out there. And what better way than looking at what employers want from prospect applicants to have as skills. And we need technology for this. Otherwise, we will need decades with only the human eye and brain. But at the same time, we need the experts to validate. As we have done for the current exercise, we validated our findings with the experts out there who know each sector of the economy and the labor market very well. We will keep doing this for validating findings, but also for training the algorithm, because AI needs a lot of training. And this is what we are also currently doing. So we need the validation that will allow our model to learn and to reach the point where we can have really safe findings that will, of course, still need to be then validated by the humans.
Thank you. And on this note, and I have to say, the issue of artificial intelligence being used in job searching and so on, this is a huge topic that I hope with Laura and the other members of the team we can come back to, because it's a pretty wide area, both with a lot of interesting applications, but also with a lot of risks which are connected, which have been already, quite put forward, especially, when it comes to the use of LinkedIn and or like the pre-screenings of CVs and so on. So, yeah, it comes with certain challenges as well and certain biases which we need to tackle. So I hope that we are going to continue this conversation with Laura, but also Dimitrios with ESCO and the great job that you're doing over there. And thank you so much for joining The Sound of Economics for this episode. And I would like to remind our listeners that this episode is linked to the research project at Bruegel on future work and inclusive growth in Europe, supported by and developed in collaboration with the Mastercard Center for Inclusive Growth. And The Sound of Economics will keep following the project, and there will be more episodes dedicated to the theme to come. And as usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website, www.bruegel.org. Thanks a lot for joining The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.